Welcome back to the Amber May Show. I am so glad you are here with me today. I have such a heartfelt show today. It's a sad show, but we are going to have some victories that come from it. And until we share our heartache, we can't make a change in our nation. And it's going to be a two-part show. It's going to be part one and part two. And it's about someone who lost a beloved wife in the hospital, and she didn't have COVID. So on today's episode, we are talking about the sinister plots that were happening in the hospitals. And I don't want you to think, oh, I'm so anti-doctor, I'm so anti-this. I'm anti all of those corrupt people that forced the hand of so many people and caused a lot of death. Okay, so there was an evil agenda that got perpetrated on you and me and everybody else. And that's what I'm upset about. So on today's show, it's a heavy show. We talk to one man who shares the steps and the things that happened in his life. And we're hoping to make a change. We can come together and we can all put these people accountable. If we think the government's going to do it, that's not going to happen. You and I have to come together and link arms, and we will win together. So visit me on the website at theambermayshow.com. And if you believe in what I'm doing, consider becoming an angel investor. Donate $5, $10, $100, whatever you think you could contribute to the program. That would be wonderful. I am not sponsored by Big Pharma, so anything you could do would really be a blessing. You can also be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com and subscribing there as well. I always add more content to Telegram, so join me on the Telegram channel at The Amber May Show on Telegram. You can find me at True Social at Amber May or Frank Social at Amber May. But coming up next is the story of Kurt's wife. Told you guys, I have a gentleman coming on the program. His name is Kurt Bay, and he has a heartbreaking story about the whole COVID narrative and how it has wrecked his family because it took the life of his beloved wife. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing the story of your wife.
Thanks, Amber. I appreciate being on.
There's so much that we can unpack just listening to your story about how COVID led to your wife dying in the hospital. And I think most of us by now have been touched in some way or form. I know for me personally, I have been touched by this too, with the rules and how doctors just lost touch of being doctors with COVID. And I've lost loved ones, you've lost loved ones. But I'd like a little bit of background. Like, how did this happen? Like, what's the background? How did we get to where your wife went into the hospital and passed away? Share us your journey, and as we do that, we can dive into more details.
Yeah, sure. Thank you again. Tammy Bay, a 59-year-old, healthy, sexy, athletic, active woman with no drugs, no alcohol, no tobacco, no medical conditions whatsoever. December 23 last year, we were attended a Christmas party with our family, a routine, regular annual event. 40 or 50 people attend, families all over the valley, and we usually have a pretty good time. We went home a little bit fatigued. The next morning, woke up a bit fatigued, didn't think much of it. Christmas Day, we celebrated with our boys and our grandkids, and both of us acknowledged to each other that we were not feeling the best, and assumed that we probably had bumped into Omicron at the time. That was what the going news media was saying, was that it was running rampant. And although we weren't concerned about it, while we were unvaccinated, we had already had COVID at least once, maybe twice. We weren't worried about it. And we've been around countless people who had had it during the initial phase when they were shedding, et cetera, our neighbors, our friends. And we just didn't feel like there was any reason to trust this experimental drug until they had more evidence that it was, not only did it work, but it didn't cause any safety issues. So we had just chose as family not to do that, and we didn't, but we felt, we didn't feel all that good. Neither one of us went and got a test or anything. We'd been together for going on 40 years. We knew how to take care of each other and had plenty of flus and plenty of bronchial issues, plenty of surgeries, plenty of everything that everyone goes through at that, this age. And so we did what we normally do, and we hung out with each other for a couple of days and drank fluids, took our vitamins, did our normal stuff. And then, on the, around the 27th, 28th, I ran and got, picked up some new golf clubs, from PXG here in town, spent a couple hours there. I came back a little bit fatigued. She said she was going to go do some of her regular stuff. She was a vintage furniture, clothing, all kinds of stuff in that lane. The name of her company was Eclectic Flamingo.
And did she have like an online store or a,
She had a Instagram, but she didn't have an online presence necessarily. Okay. She had in Washington State, where we had lived for 10 years prior to coming back. And so just in 2011, we left for Washington. I'd sold my companies. Our kids had grown and gone to college. We were looking at each other with not sure what we wanted to do for the rest of our lives. And she said, hey, I'd like to go back and reconnect with my family. They were from Washington State. So in 2011, we went back. We stayed there until 2021. We came back here to Arizona in 2021. So we hadn't been here for very long when this happened. We hadn't established doctor care. We hadn't established any primary care. We hadn't done much of anything. We were living our best life. We had bought our forever home. We had, you know, started the remodel, started doing all the stuff that we were going to do. So we hadn't had much time to do a lot of other things. We were just enjoying what was going on when this happened. So late December, right before, it was around, I don't know, 28th or 29th, my son and a group of his buddies all own a bunch of Airbnbs all over the country. And she would go and clean one of the Airbnbs in Scottsdale for her. She loved doing that for the boys. Wow. It meant a lot to her to be able to contribute. So in any case, she went up on the 28th or 29th and she did that. She came back and she said it wiped her out and she was going to spend the rest of the day just chilling. So I said, no problem, babe. What do you want me to do? She said, can you make chicken noodle soup? I ran and got some homemade stuff, came back and made it like normal. And then we hung out together, watched some movies. New Year's came, New Year's Eve came. We made a decision. We weren't going to do anything. There wasn't a lot to do, but both of us were still pretty fatigued, but just not sick. Neither one of us were sick. We didn't have headaches or fever or anything like that. We were fatigued. And when we had had, the COVID strain, the very first time we got it, we kind of joked about it being the sleeping disease because we were really fatigued for almost a month and It took a long time for us to get through it. But in any case, we didn't feel like, you know, this was going to be that big of a deal. We were fine. We were treating each other, vitamin C's and fluids and all that. And that's all we knew. there wasn't any instruction necessarily in the market that said, hey, if you get it, these are the three things that you need to do. And if there was, it wasn't being published on mainstream media or any outlets that, you know, you could go to, and you needed to have somebody that was aware of what to do. And you had to be in their network to be able to know this stuff. And we just weren't that plugged in. So for us, we thought we were doing all the right things in.
Let me pause that right there, because when Donald Trump came out and started talking about how he got over COVID, and he was using ivermectin and different hydroxychloroquine, different drugs, they wanted to shut that down completely and hide that. In fact, they were forbidding pharmacies to even fill ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, one of those. They were telling doctors not to fill those prescriptions and threatening them. And so it was going to be really hard. That's why, you know, I partnered with Dr. Stella. She's a frontline doctor, because we had a few really brave physicians that wanted to get this information out. And when I say brave, it was brave, because I interviewed one doctor, Dr. Eric Naputi, and the federal government went after him for billions of dollars because he was teaching people online about natural supplements that they can take to help fight COVID. And the government wanted to shut him down because they didn't want this information to come out. So the fact this is happening to you is exactly what the aim of the government was doing. They were taking away the information that was actually going to help people. And by doing so, they've injured your family permanently. I mean, your wife is now with the Lord, but from now until then, you're a widower and your kids are without their mother. And that is sickening. Absolutely sickening.
I completely agree with you that this was deliberate. And I think one of the things, one of the worst things that came out of that was even so, if I believed, and I did, that hydroxychloroquine, based on the evidence that I had looked at back in February and March, in June of 2020, my wife lost her mother to this, and or in July, I'm sorry. So she was one of the first people in Washington State, not one of the first, but one of the first couple, you know, hundred or thousand in Washington State to get. She was on a camping trip with the rest of Tammy's sisters and her nephews and nieces. They called me about, you know, 100 miles away and said, hey, she's really sick. She's been sick for 5 days. Can you take her to the hospital? And I thought, well, yeah, of course I will. No problem. I don't care. You know, I'll take her. So I took her and we had to go through this. I spent 4 hours with her. She was definitely sick. She, you know, fatigued, didn't feel well, sweating, but I stayed with her. I held her hand. We prayed. We laughed. I kissed her on the forehead, said, you're going to be fine, blah, all those things. For 4 hours, I stayed with her in that emergency room. And when I left to go to the restroom, I came back. They locked the door and wouldn't let me in.
Whoa.
And that was the very first experience we had in July of 2020 that this was, you know, a little nutty. So I left, and 7 days later, after they vented her and gave her remdesivir, she was dead.
The first time I think any Americans ever experienced this, where they medically kidnapped their loved ones and you had no access to the loved ones.
So no one did. None of her family, none of her daughters, no one got to do anything except for they did a FaceTime or something, but she couldn't speak. She was on a full respirator thing before they finally ventilated her. But the point I was trying to make was that during that period, we educated ourselves pretty quickly on what, you know, we might want to do or have. And hydroxychloroquine, obviously, after President Trump said that, we ordered it. I found a place like a lot of people did. The problem was it never came with any instructions for me. And I'm not a dumb guy, but I didn't know if I needed to take it every day. And so then I needed 1,000 pills for the rest of my life or 2,000, whatever. Or do I just take it as soon as I get it? And how do I know? And all those things. So it really was just, I had it. It was an asset, but I didn't know what to do with it. And so it was sitting in the cabinet. Even today, it was in the cabinet when this happened, but we didn't know what to do with it. And so after, I don't know, the New Year's Eve day when we stayed home, the next day we got up, we moved around, we were doing okay, but she was still pretty fatigued. She said she was going to run down to her shop. She had a shop in Mesa with all of her goods, furniture and trinkets and all the stuff that she enjoyed doing. And so she was going to run down there. She did. She came back and she said, hey, I'm done. That's all I can do. Next day she ran to the store, came back. She said, that's about all I can do. The evening of the third, about 1:30 or 2 in the morning, she'd gotten up to use the restroom. And when she was coming back to bed, she said, babe, can you help me? And I said, I didn't understand what she was getting at. It was the middle of the night, but she fell down and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And as I leaned over her to help her up, she turned to me in her traditional self. She said, get off of me. And we chuckled about it a little bit, but she got back in bed and she said she was fine. And I said, are you okay? She said, yep, I'm fine. The fourth came and she was really fatigued. She said, I'm going to stay home, not do much. She stayed in pajamas all day and she really struggled to get around. She got into the hot tub and thought that, you know, maybe that would help loosen her up a little bit. Like I said, we've been together for almost 40 years and have treated each other for everything. And for us, it was just normal, you know, hey, we're going to get through this and not a big deal.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your support by bringing you the pillow that started it all. Get my standard My Pillow, regularly $49.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Just like all of you, I've tried every pillow out there and none of them worked. That's why I invented MyPillow. My patented pill adjusts your exact individual needs, helps keep your neck aligned, and it holds its shape all night long, regardless of your sleep position. So you get the best sleep of your life. Because it works, we've sold over 70 million MyPillows, and now I'm bringing them to you for the lowest price ever. Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you'll get my standard MyPillow for only $19.98. For a more custom fit, my Premium Queen for only $27.98. Or my Premium King, only $34.98. My 60-day money-back guarantees it'll be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
Hey, everybody, this is Cash Patel, and you're watching The Amber May Show.
Hey, guys, I want to give you a pro tip to help keep your family healthy when everyone around you is coughing, sniffling, or sneezing, okay? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go first to DrStellaMD.com. When you're there, go ahead and grab some COVID bites. Also, get your ivermectin. Set up your telemed appointment and get your ivermectin. I'm going to give you a promo code to help you save some money, and use promo code AMBERMAY, one word, and that will help you save money. Now, here's your pro tip for you. You can use this on your entire family. The adult doses too. I've talked to a medical expert. They said cut it in half when you're dealing with children. So one tablet. What I do with my kids, because it's just too big of a pill for them, I get a blender. I put a pill in there. I fill it with water and like some flavoring, and then boom, I have them drink it before school. Pro tip, and what it has, and it's amazing. It has quercetin, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all the therapeutics to help keep your body healthy and working at optimum health. Support your body's immune system when you use the COVID bites. They're amazing. So go to DrStellaMD.com, grab your COVID bites, get your ivermectin, use promo code AMBERMAY, and save some money.
You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
That evening, I told my boys that if the next morning, if she wasn't doing well, I was going to take her to urgent care.
Let me ask you about you. How were you doing at this time? Because you both were fatigued, and I know you're trying to care for your wife. Like, how were you feeling physically at this time?
I was still fatigued, a little brain fog. But I felt like by then, by the third or fourth, by about the third, I was back to almost 100%.
Okay.
But I did have a little foggy brain. Mm-hmm. So, and that went on for a little while, but it wasn't anything that was stupid. It was just, took me a little while to process some things. But the point is, I was doing well and she was not. And on that, I told my boys that on that morning of the 5th, that if she wasn't feeling well or doing any better, I was going to take her to urgent care down the road. And I knew they had monoclonal antibodies at this one urgent care. We'd had a friend that had gone there, and they said, well, if we go there and get that, that's the treatment, and she should be fine. That was on the 5th of January this last year. So we went down there to the urgent care. They weren't open at the time I got there. It was about 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning, just a little bit before eight, I think. And we were drinking coffee and kind of joking with each other a little bit. We got there, they weren't open. She asked, what do you want to do? And I said, well, just go get some more coffee and we'll come back and get you in there. And so I headed out, and we hadn't been here long, so we didn't know the area. We just bought this home in August. So here it's, a little bit January. We hadn't been here for very long. We just didn't know the area very well. And I took off driving to go find a coffee shop. And as I came around the corner, I turned down a sort of a dead end road. It wasn't a dead end, but it was clearly a industrial, and it ended up being Banner Baywood Hospital.
Wow. Okay.
And the big emergency sign sitting out there on the road, like you see all the time. And I, didn't think anything of it and was going to turn around. And she said, oh, you're going to take me to the emergency room, huh? And I said, well, I wasn't thinking about it. But she goes, well, I think that's probably where I'm going to end up. And I didn't understand it because I didn't think she was emergency room kind of sick. But she said, yeah, let's just go there. And I said, are you sure? And she said, yep, let's go there. So I went, we pulled up there, and then she asked me for a wheelchair to get her a wheelchair. And I was really busted up inside. I just couldn't figure out how, even in just a couple hours, she had gone to where she felt like emergency room was the best course. And a wheelchair was going to be necessary. And so I got it. We got inside. They gave her a little oxygen. Her oxygen was low. And she sat there for a little bit, and she started to feel a lot better. And we joked about, we'll get you some treatment. I'm sure you have pneumonia, or something like that. You'll be fine. We'll get you some treatment and get you out of here. So they put her in the emergency room nurse, super nice girl. She visited with us for a little bit, asked us the normal questions, did the blood test, said, I have to take a COVID test. We didn't care. Big deal. Do your thing. She did that. She came back about 45 minutes later. She'd been in and out periodically just to check on Tam. But about 45 minutes later, she came back. She said, hey, just so you can have some peace of mind, you are negative for COVID, but you definitely have pneumonia. So we're going to get
you. I had pneumonia, and they gave me like an antibiotic or maybe a breathing treatment, and I was good. So this is kind of crazy that if she had pneumonia, it should have been an easy treatment, and she should have been able to. Because I've had it twice with both pregnancies. I have so much fluid on me that after I give birth, and you're kind of bedridden for the most part because you know you just gave birth. It always goes to my lungs. So I've had it twice and it's miserable and you don't feel good, but you get some antibiotics, a little bit of a breathing treatment, and then you're good.
And that's exactly what we thought. Both of us had, you know, a form of pneumonia in our, you know, adult life before and treated it together. Maybe went to the hospital and got an antibiotic and came home and, you know, rested for 10 days or something. But it's sort of the way we thought this was going to go. She said, we're going to get you a room and get you some treatment and then you'll be able to go home. And so we were both relieved that, you know, okay, great. You know, this will be easy. And so we've never been to this hospital again. It's just fine. Okay. We got doctors that are going to take care of you. It's going to be fine. We got in the elevator, the emergency room nurse, got in with us. And as she was, as they were taking us to the floor, we don't know where we're going. We're just going to the floor to get treated for pneumonia. And, when the elevator doors open, I've said this before, it was a scene out of a movie. To us, or to me in particular. Tammy was laying down, so she may not have recognized it, but it looked like a movie scene. Everyone was in, you know, head to toe covered gear, like they were in some nuclear reactor of some sort. Lots of people standing outside rooms, punching on keyboards and computers, but nobody to greet you really, no nurses sitting around, kind of hanging out. It was just a different vibe, and I felt a little uncomfortable about it, but thought, well, it's just the way it is with COVID these days, I guess. Maybe just everything's empty. And as they wheeled us down to the room, again, we don't know where we're at. We're just in a room to get treated for pneumonia or on a, you know, we think we're in the right floor. As we pull up to the doors, it was a big room, double doors. The emergency room nurse starts to open the doors and pushes in. And as the doors open, we're met with about six white coats. And I was taken back immediately with why we got so many nurses and doctors here. All of a sudden we had a infectious disease person there. We had I can't remember the name of the guy that does the lung work, but,
pulmonologist.
We had a x-ray or a respiratory therapist, assistant, a technician, an RN, and a charge nurse all met us in that room.
Wow.
And and again, I don't think Tammy at the time was so concerned with it. She just probably was overwhelmed inside with that, hey, I'm going to get some good treatment. I'll be able to get home. I don't feel good. And for me, I was a little bit nervous, like, wow, this is really weird. I've never seen this, not even with her mom. I mean, it was just a regular emergency room person, put us in a room, and then they locked me out. But this was like this was planned. There was eight people. They knew what they were going to do. They all knew their roles. And then, there's this one person who, to me, ended up being Satan. And that's the hospitalist. That guy was basically calling and organizing the plays. So he went right to a laptop, started punching out numbers and whatever he was doing and calling plays, telling people what to do, where to go, get her this, get her that. And I kind of got in the middle of it for a second or two and said, you know, what's going on here? Why all the attend? What are we doing? And he said, she's got COVID and, you know, we're going to treat her for COVID. And I go, no, she doesn't. She just tested negative downstairs. She doesn't have COVID. I'm not saying she didn't, but she doesn't have COVID. That's not what they said she had pneumonia downstairs. Well, that's not what we see. I've seen this, you know, 100,000 times. She's got COVID and this is exactly what she has. And so we're going to treat her for it. And I go, no, you're not. I don't know what that means. So you're not going to do that. She four floors down, she tested negative. Well, it's not in the system. How could it not be in the system? It's four floors down. It's your hospital. You tested her and now it's negative, but you're telling me that you're going to treat her for COVID. And he said, well, this is what, when it gets in the system, we'll figure it out. But right now it's not in the system. I go, well, I'll go get her. And they said,
so if it's not in the system, he's like dead set that it's going to be COVID.
Right.
Frankly, so, I'm going to show a video on this episode of the founder, the creator, the inventor of the PCR test, mm-hmm. and how he said you cannot use a PCR test to diagnose anything. This is the inventor. For my friend who died of breast cancer, she went into the emergency room. They tested her for COVID, a positive test. They put her on the COVID floor. They tested her again, a negative test. They tested her again. It was a positive test. Tested her again. It was a negative test. So what is it? Is it positive or negative?
Misuse PCR to estimate all these supposed free viral RNAs that may or may not be there.
I think misuse PCR is not quite... I don't think you can misuse PCR. No, the results, the interpretation of it. See, if you can say, if they could find this virus in you at all, and with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body, okay? So that could be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. And it is. There's very little of what they call HIV, and what's been brought out here by Philpott and Isai already. The measurement for it is not exact at all. It's not as good as our measurement for things like apples. An apple is an apple. You know, you can get something that's kind of like, if you got enough things that look kind of like an apple and you stick them all together, you might think it's an apple. But and HIV is like that. Those tests are all based on things that are invisible, and the results are inferred in a sense. PCR is separate from that. It's just a process that's used to make a whole lot of something out of something. That's what also, it is. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and it doesn't tell you that the thing you...
I was so frustrated because she wasn't dying of COVID. She had metastatic breast cancer. She needed extra care. They should have put her on a regular floor for her friends to come see her. Those tests were used by the federal government to...
Well, and I wouldn't give a pass to the hospital. They had to make a choice of how they were going to treat someone. So they used that test for the exact same thing. So you're right. We didn't at the time. I had heard that in the past. I'd, you know, seen some representation that was a joke. And so I really didn't care because downstairs it was negative. And all I was saying was, even if you were going to treat her for COVID, what does that mean?
Right.
And if you're my feeling was she has pneumonia. She felt like she had pneumonia. Again, we've been together for a long time. And we'd had COVID before. So we weren't.
Well, remember during COVID, pneumonia didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Neither did flu.
Nothing existed except COVID, right?
Yeah.
Everything disappeared. And then it's back again. That's weird, right?
John Cullen does a great data dive on that topic. Him and I have had several conversations about this. But to Tammy's situation, I could tell that she was a little bit she was a little bit anxiety ridden now because there's 8 doctors. I'm arguing with this guy who's saying that she has COVID. She was just told she doesn't have COVID. Her mom died less than a year ago. And she's worried about all these things are raising her anxiety. And I just wanted to calm her down. So I said, okay, look, if she has COVID, give her monoclonal antibodies and let's start there. And they said, oh, we can't do that. And again, I said, how come you can't do that? What are you talking about? And the hospitalist called the RN over and she said, now we can't do it we can't do it because she doesn't qualify. I said, what the hell do you mean she doesn't qualify? If she's got COVID, isn't that the first thing you guys do? And they said, she doesn't qualify. I go, how could she not qualify? If you say she has COVID and that's a qualifying issue, why can't you give her the ivermectin or the monoclonals? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, the reason she has to qualify is because they were just rationed by the federal government on the 3rd of January.
I remember that.
So the state's ability to be able to dispense that now has to fill out some form. It says you qualify. Well, I said, well, fine. What's it look like? Let's get it filled out. Fine. They said, yeah, we'll get to it today or whatever. But right now I can tell you after our experience, she doesn't qualify. I said, well, I need to see the form. I want to know what it is to qualify and let's get it today. Yeah. Okay. We'll get back to you, Mr. Bay. Thank you. And, but we're going to get her on an IV and we're going to get her, a Z-Pak basically is what they referred to it as. I don't know. It was an antibiotic thing of some sort. And for me, that was fine. Get her on an IV, get her on a whatever. And I'll sit down over there in the corner and me and her can talk. We'll figure this out. So I sat down, she got hooked up, me and her joked a little bit. They had one window in the room. That's all. And, so at least we had some sunlight, and the room didn't look like a tomb necessarily, but, it was an uncomfortable situation all the way around. It was uncomfortable. People, just so many people there, everyone talking COVID and talking about, you know, they were calling out plays. They were all talking in code to each other about what they needed to do and how they needed to do it. And, when the guy said they couldn't dispense the, monoclonals, I said, well, what about ivermectin? Can we get her some ivermectin then? Everything I've read so far, that's something that's working. You know, Joe Rogan, Aaron Rodgers, I joked about, everyone seems to have, and they said, yeah, it's not, our hospital doesn't support that. So it's not part of our program, and so we won't dispense it.
Hey, I'm gonna get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm gonna take a quick break. So yesterday I showed you how I just got my brand new weight loss coffee, but it does more than that. It helps reduce with fatigue and stress, and it helps with your mind. And yesterday I showed you how you could drink it hot with a warm glass or a hot glass of water. Today I'm going to do an experiment. I don't know how it's going to taste, so you're going to join with me. So what I did is I grabbed my little blender, I put some ice and some water in it, and if you're on keto, then heavy whipping cream is a big part of keto, like you use it on a regular basis. So I'm going to add some heavy whipping cream. So this is going to be interesting. You're going to find out live on this video if I think it tastes good or not, because it's an experiment. I might not like coffee this way. I mean, coffee's a new thing for me anyway. So this, just one scoop, is called the Java. So if you're trying to get healthier and you want to lose weight, then this is what you're going to need, because it has a lot of superfoods in it. It helps with burning fat, it helps with mental clarity and energy, and it smells really good. So here's my scoop of my coffee mix. It's called Java from Mfinity. You can find it in the links below this video, or you can go to ambermay.mymfinity.com. So it's gonna get loud, folks. It's gonna get loud. Okay, all right. Let's see how this tastes. I hope it tastes good. I think I actually need to blend it some more, so hold on. Okay, moment of truth, folks. Let's hope I don't spill on TV. That would be so embarrassing. Ooh, it's like a smoothie. Cheers! Oh, I could dig that. Next time, I'm going to put more heavy whipping cream. I could do that. Here's to losing weight. So go to ambermay.myinfinity.com or go to thetimelesspack.com. Use promo code AmberMay and grab some coffee of your own.
This is Charlie Ward. Welcome to the Amber May TV show.
Government-induced inflation, taxes, rising interest rates, all of these can have a dramatic effect on our investments. So why not buy some gold and silver? Gold and silver throughout history has been a stabilizer in people's portfolio. Protect your wealth, protect your assets by purchasing gold and silver. The easiest way to do that is contacting Jim, who you've seen on our program, Jim Tewalt, with EPS Wealth Management. That's Edward Paul Stamm, EPSWealthManagement.com.
there you can go ahead and contact them and say, hey, I would love to get my hands on some gold and silver, especially with the electronic currency that is looming on our horizon. So if they go to a total digital currency, it might be wise to have some tangible assets in your portfolio for trading, because you never know when they might cut off your income stream. So go to EPS, Edward Paul Sam, EPSWealthManagement.com. Ask for Jim Tewalt to make sure you have some gold and silver in your portfolio. Let him know Amber May sent you.
You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
I said, well, can you ask, can you formally ask your head people and see if we can get that? I'd like to get her on that if that's available. And he said, yeah, I'll look into it. And for at the time, again, this is the very first day with a few hours of her being there. It's now about, 11 or 12 o'clock. We've been there for a few hours. They've got her all hooked up. They are gone through all this stuff, little heightened anxiety. Now it's kind of mellowed out and I'm sitting in the room. The pulmonologist guy, I think I said that right. Pulmonologist, is that the right? Yeah. So that guy comes in, he talks to Tammy and says, hey, you're going to be fine. I've had 4,000 patients in your situation, just like you. You're going to go home in, 24 hours, 36 hours, or he said 24, 48 hours. At the most, 3 days, you'll be home. No problem.
He should have been the one to prescribe budesonide. Budesonide was one of those treatments that was really helping COVID patients with the breathing. Dr. Richard Bartlett out of Texas, and he was the one who just started to really preach about this budesonide, and it was turning around patients like crazy with budesonide. And then you combined it with ivermectin and zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, and boom, you have the powerhouse. Like, it's frustrating because he should have known, because he treats asthma patients. He should have known that was a great drug to use.
Amber, I think that's part of the, the challenge that we face right now, is that there were so many things that became deliberate, obviously, in terms of how they decided to treat this. This whole protocol thing is not a conspiracy. There were levels of protocol in terms of treatment and in vaccination and in medication. So he comes in and says this, so we feel pretty good. He says, you're going to be fine. We're going to keep you on an IV and some antibiotics. We'll check on you in the next couple of days. Gave her a breathing thing, said, do this a couple of times. Hey, my wife is a disciplined woman, man. If he said do that and it was a white coat, she was going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so immediately we chuckled a little bit, and she started, as soon as he walked out, she started doing her exercises on the breathing thing. And again, she had a little nasal oxygen thing. It was at about 7 liters, at the time. And, I don't know how they determined that, because downstairs it was at 5 or something. It wasn't that, but anyway, they had her at 7, and, he came in, checked on her, said that, left. About an hour or so later, the hospitalist guy came back in, started pecking away, and brought in this nurse, an assistant nurse who had been in the room at the very first time. And she began asking probing Tammy about vaccination and whether she wanted to be vaccinated now. And she started to really frustrate Tam. And Tam was like, no, why are you bugging? Leave me alone. And it became where, her blood, her heart rate was going up. Everything was, so I asked the young lady to leave, and that we would get, send someone else in or something like that. To just tell you the story on that girl, she never was allowed to come back in the room. My wife complained later that night. But just so you know, that was her first day, first patient. And she didn't, and there's more, you and me can have a different conversation about how they structured these contract nurses and stuff. And we'll get into that a little bit too. But when she left, she came back in one time to move Tammy's bed. Tammy had asked if she could have more light, if she could see the window instead of being positioned the way she was. So they had her pointing right at a TV, and Tam didn't care. She wanted to be at an angle so she could see out the window. Mm-hmm. And when the girl did it, she made the oxygen meter on the wall go up. So it went from 7 to 10, and it wasn't that big of a deal at first, but it was whistling. And when she tried to adjust it, she got it almost back up to 13. Then it would fluctuate between 10 and 13. And that noise was really bugging my wife. So Tammy said, can you please put it back to where it was? What was it at? And I said, I think it was at like 7 or something when he left. So I said, can you get it back to 7? So at least it's not whistling. And she said, yeah, but she couldn't. She was inexperienced and she left and she brought in the charge nurse and the charge nurse. Now it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 2:33 in the afternoon. And the charge nurse comes in and she starts adjusting it and she's reading some notes and she couldn't get it back. She said, we'll just leave it at 10. And I said, it doesn't have to, but why does it have to be at 10? It doesn't have to be at 10. She was just at 7 and the pulmonologist was fine. And the girl turns to me and says, who are you? And it was the first time I'd been really confronted in a, you know, adversarial way. And I said, oh, I'm Tammy's husband. I've been here all day and we're trying to sort out what's going on. She goes, well, you've been here all day. I said, yeah, been here all day. It's all good. And she goes, well, you can't be here all day. You're only supposed to be here for an hour. I said, what are you talking about? Like, I've been here all day. Everything's fine. And she said, nope, you're going to have to leave. So I'm not leaving. I've been here all day and I'm not going to leave. I'm going to hang out with my wife till she goes to sleep and then I'll see her in the morning. She said, nope, you're going to have to leave. And so I said, well, I'm not leaving. She left, came back, three security guards and a charge nurse and two floor nurses supporting the three security guards.
Let me pause you right there. This is called medical kidnapping. They do it to parents who take their kids into the hospital for whatever. And if the parents don't agree with the procedure or they want a second opinion or they're not comfortable with it, they will trespass a parent out of the hospital. They will take custody rights away from the parent. Now the parent does not have rights over their kid. They don't know where their kid is. It's in the hands of CPS and the government. Now they did this with adults and you've experienced this firsthand. They trespassed you out of the hospital, didn't they?
They did. And so when the three guys came up, I knew immediately from the experience with Tammy's mom that this was going to be a confrontation. And I'd seen so much on the news by then that, you know, I knew what was going to happen and I didn't want to cause, I'm not a weak man. Don't want to, you know, but I'm not stupid and I wasn't going to cause something that was going to create problems for my wife. Just FYI, I'm a former boxer. My whole youth was a fighter. It wouldn't have ended well. And not for me either, probably. I'm too old. But the point is, I wasn't going to just stand there and let them do whatever they wanted to do with my wife. I was happy to pick her up and leave if that's what I needed to do.
Right.
But so when these three guys came in and they started, you know, telling me I had to leave, I turned my camera on. Unfortunately, all I got was boots. Clearly, I'm not a good experienced camera person. But the larger of them, 6'4" or 6'5", stands next to me on my right side and tries to, you know, move my arm and make me walk to the door. And the two other ones are on my left side trying to, you know, kind of guide me to the door. And I'm not leaving. So I backed up against the white board where, you know, the board's amber, where they write the technician and the nurse and what they're on and all that stuff. And I stood there and I could see my wife on the bed. And I said, I'm not leaving until I know what's going on. They haven't heard from one person about how they're going to treat my wife. Not one. All you guys have said was you're going to get her on an IV and some sort of antibiotic. And then you've argued back and forth with me about whether she has COVID, whether she doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you haven't said how you're going to treat her if she does or if she doesn't. I don't know what's going on. So I'm not leaving. No.
You also had experience with your mother-in-law. Once you just stepped out to go to the bathroom, you were done. You had no access to her. And it was on the grace of the hospital to get back to you.
Yep. And at that point, it was just, you know, normal protective reaction that was going on.
Right.
She's my love and my wife and my kid's mom. And we've been together for 40 years. I wasn't going to just walk out on her. So we went through a little bit of a confrontation. It got a bit physical and we went back and forth. And I looked over at Tam and she said, just talk to him, see if you can talk to the head nurse. So they got the head nurse to come back in and the head nurse was someone that wasn't there earlier in the day. And I said, she doesn't have COVID, but yeah, you guys are exactly what I just told you. You're telling me she has COVID, and you're going to treat her for COVID, but you can't verify she has COVID. She tested negative downstairs. You said it's not in the system. You haven't told me how you're going to treat her. I'm very uncomfortable leaving her in this situation. And the nurse pushed back a couple times and gave me the routine. Well, it's just not in the system. As soon as we get, you know, more info, we'll let you know and all that
stuff. It's still not in the system after all day.
After about five, almost 6 hours. And I said, it's just not good enough. I need something else. I'm happy to go home. I mean, she doesn't need me to sit here and look at her all day, but I need to know more. And the lady said, okay, here, she left. She came back. Security guards are still, you know, they're being choppy and mouthy. Like, you know, they just retarded, way too much power. She came back and she goes, okay, look, it's not in the system. I understand that you say she tested negative. The nurse isn't here anymore, so I can't talk to her, but we're not going to treat her for COVID. We're going to give her an antibiotic, keep that flowing, and we will, we'll look at it again tomorrow. Are you fine with that? I said, yeah, that's fine. And I turned on the whiteboard and I wrote my name, my phone number, and I wrote no remdesivir, no high flow oxygen, and no sedation without contacting Curtis Bay, and put my phone number, my email. And I turned to Tammy and I said, babe, are you okay with this? And she said, yes. So we left. I was escorted out. By then the cops had came because it was, like I said, it had become a little bit confrontational. So I got escorted out after that. And when I came, what I found was they don't tell you, again, like a lot of stuff, they don't give you any rules. So I didn't know that I couldn't just show up in the morning. So I got up at, I didn't sleep most of the night, but I did get up at like 5:36 in the morning and I got down there at 7:00. They said, well, you can't come in. I found out that I was, you know, trespassed and can't be in the building and all that stuff. So I made some calls, was able to get back in, but I couldn't be there until 2:00 in the afternoon. My kids called at, and got the policy basically, because I was so upset. And they found out that we could call at 10:00 in the morning and at 6:00 at night and get updates on her condition, but that there was only a 1 hour period to be with her. And that was at 2:00 every single day. So I said, fine, I'll be there at 2:00 every day. And my youngest boy was still in Portland, Oregon, living at the time. And my oldest boy was here in Chandler. So he was local and could see her if he wanted to, but he didn't want to see his mom that way. So, I was the one that was going to go there at 2:00 every day to see her. So the second day came, we texted all night long. We texted again that morning. Everything was fine. I came in there. They had, done some blood work. They'd, been trying to give her a shot in the belly, which at the time we didn't know what that was. And we were very uncomfortable with it. The next morning they said it was to, you know, impede blood clots or, keep blood clots from forming, and that in her condition, it was a, you know, just a good, safe thing to do. I didn't care whether she did it or not, as long as it wasn't some drug that, you know, was something weird that I hadn't heard about. She did a little research on her phone and said that she was okay with it. So she told them it was okay to do. I left on that second day. I called my boy on the way home and told him, I'm very uncomfortable. We have to get her out of there. Oh, by the way, I had to get escorted there. I forgot to say that. I was met at the desk by security. Security had to escort me to the room. And that was only after pleading my case, you know, that I wasn't a problem, that if they, you know, anyway, I ended up getting, by the grace of God, got to go back up there that day, escorted with a security guy. That I sat in there, we visited a bit. She said she felt better. Her oxygen was at around 10 or 13 liters, somewhere in there. And that was because it had been bumped and never reset. And the pulmonologist, apparently when he came in that morning, because that's another thing that they do in this protocol, they come in the hours you're not allowed to be there. So there's no communication with the treating physician. And by the way, there's really no treating physician. There's nobody assigned to the patient, where you're going to have a regular doctor that's going to see her and you can talk to that doctor or that head nurse or anything. It doesn't happen that way. Something else people should be aware of, but he left it at that rate. I went home that night. We texted again. I told her, I got to get you out of there, babe. I'm very uncomfortable with what's going on. My oldest boy started working on trying to find a way to get her out of there, find a doctor that would take her under his care, find a different hospital. We tried Mayo. We tried Chandler Regional. We tried a bunch of different hospitals. We finally got a referral from a friend of ours, an NFL player, who said, here's my doctor. He knows the deal. He decided he would take her under his care, and he came up with a treatment plan. The next morning on the 3rd, when we showed up, the referral had been sent in by his office. So they had the referral when I got there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the infectious disease person was in the room when I walked in, which was rare, I found out, because I never saw him again. But that day she was in there on the 3rd day, which would have been the 8th. Boy, this is hard, Amber. It's okay. It was a year ago.
It's all right.
Anyway, I made sure that they had the referral for transfer. I said, you guys received that referral, right? Yes, we did. And boy, are you lucky. How did you get a hold of that doctor? Blah, blah, blah. I go, you know, for me, it didn't matter. Look, ma'am, I just want to make sure she has the referral. We're looking to get her into some different care. So thank you very much. When will we know about it? And Tammy was a little bit nervous. My wife was she was the face of God on this earth. She saw good in everybody, and she believed the white coats were telling her the truth. It wasn't she was gullible or anything like that, and she wasn't naive. But if she didn't believe that people were so evil that they would right. not. And so when I told her that we were going to transfer her, she was a little bit nervous about it. She just wanted to make sure she was going to get the right care. She was feeling pretty good. And so this is on day 3. The infectious disease person says, oh yeah, we got it. Great doctor, blah, blah, blah. And so we're convinced that when I leave at around 2 o'clock, we're definitely going to get her transferred. And Tam's a little bit nervous about it, but she's okay. This is going to happen. I called my son, told him, looks like it's going to happen. My oldest boy had gotten tickets for my youngest boy to fly in. So he was coming in that night. The next day was the 9th. Would have been her 4th day there. That night when I got home that afternoon, we called around at about 6 o'clock to find out about the transfer. No one knew anything, nobody. And of course, nobody was there to talk to. So we're super frustrated, extremely upset, very unhappy with the communication, the treatment. There's no definite protocol. We still don't have any idea. She hasn't tested positive. They don't have a plan. But she's isolated, and she clearly needs oxygen, and she needs something. And she's nervous enough that she's just not going to walk out of the hospital.
Oh, really? No. So that was off the table. Like, your wife was not going to leave.
She,
even
well,
though you
it wasn't,
already had a doctor set up. Like, that was like, she
no, 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 no. She would have left with that under that care. So I'll clear that up real quick. She would have left. What she wasn't going to do was lean over the bed and come home. She wasn't going to get up and put on her shoes and say, hey, let's go to the house with what the transfer was. She would have done. She wasn't excited about it, but she was going to do.
So even though you had the care set up until the doctor signed off on the transfer, she wasn't going to leave the hospital.
Yeah. She wasn't going to get up on her own and walk out. She was comfortable. She was feeling better. Her language to me, which is just gross, was the nurse that she had cared for that night on the 3rd day told her that she was a Christian and that she would pray with her and that she would be fine, but this is the best care you can get, blah, blah, blah. So my wife, again, she felt like, look, let's just let these guys have a day or two. Doctor said I'd be home in a little bit. Let's just give it another day and see where this goes.
It's unfortunate, Curtis, because you're yep. like everybody else, or your wife was like so many other people until the doctor signed off on it. When so many people could have just left the hospital and sought other care, but when they saw the deterioration of their loved one, that made them more afraid to do that. But perhaps if more people would have just pulled the cords out of the arm and left, maybe yep. we would have seen more
people. So that goes back to the sort of the conversation we were having about the barbaric or the designed protocol. Someone had to decide how this treatment was going to happen for people. And again, it goes back to early treatment and knowledge and all that stuff. There was nobody in the public sphere saying, other than a few channels like yourself and a handful of others that may have been trying to communicate this, mm-hmm. the vast majority of people were unaware of what you do if you get to the hospital. No one said, hey, look, if you don't get treated this way on day 1 and day 2, pack it up and leave. And here's what you do when you go home. No one said here on day 3, if you're not getting this, do this. If no one said, none of that stuff existed. And where it did exist, it was a very minute amount of people that were able to find that info. But
But that makes me so sad, because all of us alt media who were called by the Lord, I heard God tell me to pick up my mic for such a time as this. It makes me so sad because we were all trying very hard to get the message out.
I agree.
The doctors we were partnering with were trying so hard to get the message out. And you have government trying to stop you at every turn. Exactly. And it was...
Well,
and then like watching it play out in my own life, like, I mean, not to the degree you experienced, Curtis, but I mean, I had it too. And it was trying to do the show, trying to go through the steps, watching loved ones die. It was so awful. Such an awful experience.
Brutal.
I wish we could have had a louder voice and a more amplified voice to have saved people. More people, you know.
Well, I went on Sean Hannity's radio show, and he gave me 11 minutes. And the only reason I went on that show was not to say how tragic this story was, although I did. The reason I wanted to be on that show was he has 27 million people. It was a huge platform. And I wanted to say to the people, look, you're not Aaron Rodgers. You're not Joe Rogan. You're not Sean Hannity. I'm a pretty smart guy. I don't need anything. I've got plenty of money. I can do all those things. But when I needed to get the kind of care that my wife needed, it was not accessible for me. Number one. Number two, no one gave me a roadmap. No one. And I wasn't living under a rock for the last year or two.
Right.
These things were available, but there wasn't any. Here's what you do on day one, day two, day three. And where it did exist, again, it existed in a very small. And to your point, the government and all the social media people were doing everything they could to squash that.
I was deplatformed off YouTube when I started gaining traction with followers. I was shadow banned on social media. So it was hard to get the message out.
Well, and so we were faced with that, and knowing that at least we had a transfer now. We had a doctor that would take her care. We had experienced a couple of days of just inaction, or the communication was horrible. By the way, at this point, and I'll tell you up front, at this point, by the fourth day, she had had 7 different nurses.
Wow.
6 or 7, I think.
Let me ask you this. How full? Do you know how full the hospitals were? Because I remember during this time, they said, oh, we're over full. We're overrun. No. And yet on social media, we saw doctors and nurses doing dance-off competitions.
No, there wasn't. On her floor, I can't say specifically because I didn't go door by door. But when I did walk to her room, she was about the 6th floor room down. And there were many that were empty or, it just wasn't the way it was being made portrayed. So we were very uncomfortable. I was very upset. I'm a man. I've been taking care of my wife and my kids forever. And now I'm in a spot where I'm impotent. And so I'm reaching out to everybody I know. I'm not sleeping. I'm calling all my friends. I find out that afternoon when we call back to check her vitals and all that stuff, and ask when the transfer is going to occur. They'd had it now for about 8 hours. Nothing had happened. They said someone would get back to me, but there was no one I could talk to at that point. I started calling friends of mine that had relationships with judges and attorneys. I wanted to get a restraining order on the hospital to stop them from treating her, period. I didn't care.
Ooh, that's brilliant.
And so I'm not as well connected as some, but I was able to get a hold of a couple judges and a few attorneys, but none of them would do it. Not one.
Are you serious?
Not one. As soon as the COVID thing was brought, because that's immediately, they just assumed it was a COVID, whether I would say it wasn't or not. If I could have said, no, she's, got heart disease, they might have done it. But the point was, I got nobody to advance this at all for me that night. And as the night wore on, a friend of mine called me who had heard me on Sean, or not hadn't heard me, had heard from another friend of ours that she was in the hospital. What was going on? He said, you know what? You need to get an attorney. And I said, oh, I've been calling all day. And he goes, no, look here. I just lost my mom. They took medical power of attorney from me. They would not let her leave. And I said, what are you talking about? First of all, why would they do that? And then, how could they get medical power of attorney? It's your mom.